Welcome to day 8 of Data School Stories or Diaries. We're here to recap day 8, which now feels like a bit of a conclusion in a way, even though there's still 2 days left and the program is quite packed. But I guess because it feels like the core of our lectures for this week are leaving or have left today, and we're back with the main group tomorrow, plus a little bit of an individual session on the Friday morning. So they felt like there was a bit of a summation to the pilot project on data stewardship that finished today. We had a bit of a farewell in a way, and we finished a little bit early, but it means it was still quite a busy day. However, before I get into the busy day, I do want to mention briefly that the previous night after my recording, there was a bit of an information session by Daniel Braggett about the RDA Alliance, which seemed very, very interesting and promising. I know it was mentioned before at DLS, but now having more of a hands-on and kind of looking at what the services that they're offering, it definitely means something that I'm sure UCT is part of, but also would be good to join as an individual. Their mission is to build social and tech bridges that promote open science around the world. Vision being to have everybody openly share data across any kind of social or technological boundaries. They have quite a lot of members. Daniel spent some time going through the different projects that they do over the course of a life cycle. Some very useful tools, including, I think I came across 23 things, libraries for research data and top 10 FAIR data things. You just get the sense there's so much material being generated in this, so many guides to help. And it will be interesting looking at what we did today to look at what are the ones that you pick that apply to your situation, because you could come at it from many different angles and sides. Today's day started off with a look at research data management policies and having a look at a few of them to compare and look at seeing what works. It was led by Joy Davidson, and she was giving us some pointers in terms of building some policies. She mentioned a few things that are quite important, which I guess is interesting to look at because we already have a policy, but it did raise some questions for me. She mentioned about, you know, identifying who does the policy apply to be clear about defining what research data is, to be making sure that whatever the policy is feeding into what the funders are asking for, and to make sure that you identify the benefits for people who are applying and sticking to this policy. It did make me think that the RDM policy talks in connection with a number of other policies. Now, I don't know. I have to look into the fact of how, if we do have an open science policy, if that's part of it, or an open scholarship policy. She did make it very clear that when writing policies, there's nothing to stop you from using the work of others. What I think I found most important for us was suddenly realizing that the policy is something that should be quite key on our website. And even though it might not be immediately visible, perhaps, it should be something that people can access and see quite quickly. And it was also partly connected to the exercise yesterday where they were looking at the research infrastructure self-assessment of UCT and making sure that the website gives you as many pointers about the things that we do. So the balance between like giving all the information that you need to cover to make people feel safe, as opposed to then also looking at how do you make it accessible for the people who need to. Interesting approach that one of the examples that we looked at by the University of Bath was simplifying the policy, into something that's quite concrete. It's almost like a one-page version of the policy, and then there's a longer one that explains it, and that I thought was quite helpful. She also reminded us another cool graph of how policy is just like one in a series of big pieces that like fit together. And she mentioned how it is important to look at the roadmap and what are your kind of long-term goals with the policies that you are doing. When drafting policies, she's also mentioned that it's important to involve all the people who are involved in the process so that there's nothing written there that somebody is going to be surprised about, and to make sure that the policy does mention that there's guiding and training that is offered for it. And the other kind of meta example being that the policy that you put out should also be an open science publication policy, which just made me think of how do we publish stuff on the web that makes it like machine friendly as well and people can search it. The next session was led by Marianne Hrutveld. She was talking to us about publishing and promoting your data. And I think she had a two-faced approach. The first one started off with looking at data journals, which is something I'd heard about but not encountered. Then I really got excited by the one that was run, I think actually out of a publisher in the Netherlands that is connected to the organization that she works for, which is DANS. And this one was called Brill. And they have a data journal called Research Data Journal for Humanities and Social Sciences, which really excited me, because what it does is it publishes the data set around your project and a 2,500 word kind of explanation of the data set, of the context and reusability. And it just made me think of how that could be something that we could build towards in the future, especially with Zamani, because I don't think it would be that painful to write 2,500 words in consultation with them and give it to a data journal along with the data article, well, along with the data that we have on Ziva Hub, and use that as a case study to kind of like promote the idea of publishing data and publishing in data journals as another way to get cited and get recognition. Because we were meant to compare different data journals and the access to their data and how they point to it. But the fact that this one was for humanities and social science, it didn't seem to have a publication fee either, just made it that much appealing. So that is definitely something to follow up on. She then took some time to take us through one of the services that is offered by OpenAIR and EOSC, which is the European Open Science Cloud, which seem to be two separate organizations. Well, they are two separate, but they were tasked by their respective governments to kind of work together because to ensure that there's no repetition of the services that they offer. So they have a whole suite of software that includes a metadata discovery service, their own version of a Dropbox, their repository, something to annotate their data. And she really wanted us to experience B2Share, which is a repository that's in a basic sense very similar to our Ziva Hub, which is based on Figshare for Institutions. What was interesting about playing around with it was just looking at how, in some ways, the interface of Ziva Hub is quite clear, quite precise, makes it very easy and intuitive to figure out, I think, but I guess I'm biased now because I spent some time working on it. But this one, in comparison, you know, if you have multiple options to add things like keywords, you have to keep clicking add instead of just like listing them. So there's a few of those tricky things. The couple of things that were a real benefit was that their comprehensive list of categories of information was much better and wider than the Australian one that we use. But also that as a contributor to the data, there was a list of roles you could add yourself to. So you could add yourself as a data steward, as a principal investigator, as a data analyzer, whatever it was, which is what we don't have at the moment. We just list them as authors. We talked a little bit about private data and the anonymization of data, and looking at the gray area of how do you keep it private, how do you keep it locked away. In Europe, they're very concerned about the GDPR, about the privacy, which seems it's quite interesting in context. And I guess we also have the POPI, Poppy Act in South Africa, Protection of Private Information Act. And this was picked up a bit later because they talked about issues about the difficulty in certain projects about creating that anonymization and also making sure that in things like interviews, and this was a very interesting thing that was raised, that if somebody's being interviewed and they might have given their consent form, but if they're talking about another person, you might not have the right to publish it without getting into trouble, which is a really restrictive thing, which I'm not sure who can really apply in a way. One of the things that Joy mentioned was a bit of a challenge, because I'd asked about their difficulties, was the idea of somebody leaving a project and how people give access to the data after the principal investigator has left, considering it might belong to somebody else. And the last thing, which was a fun task to do, was to look at scheduling how, when we go back, do we schedule certain outreach activities for different groups of people in terms of getting them to access to work better on DMP. So we were given the task of, like, you need to advocate DMP training, and how do you do it to a group of researchers? And within my group of three, we basically talked about, you know, making sure that we take them off campus, giving them some food, trying to organize a high-level speaker, that we tried to get them there by getting the person at the top involved, by talking to the heads of departments or the heads of faculty and kind of filtering it down. Also, a key point is getting funders involved, which is something I didn't quite consider, but that if you look at the reasons why people do DMPs, it's because the funders ask them. So if we can get funders to get their researchers, you must go to the session as part of your thing, it really, really is helpful. Another thing that came out, which was useful, is one way which hasn't been really approached even in this session, and I don't think we've done it before, even though I believe that Nicholas has definitely hinted at it, is to look at case studies as examples. Stumbies as great teaching tools, because they could serve as something that motivates people to do what they need to do. And we talked about creating our own context. And it still seems like we're not going to rewrite the theory that's been crowdsourced around the North quite a lot. But what we can offer is looking at people who have done stuff in a certain way here and then moving on from that, not moving on from that as much as using it as a way to get people to see, to compare themselves. Oh, I could be this researcher, sir, if I publish like this, which could work really, really well. So that was a fun little, it was actually quite a fun task to end the session with, because at that point they had basically kind of said, okay, look, this is it for now. You will have the rest of the week to do the other track, and then a semantic web session on Friday morning, which I'm quite excited about to get it to work. And then they asked us for feedback around what we thought about the process. So throughout the week, there were four lecturers, Joy, Venkat, Marianne, and Daniel Baggett, who didn't really present yet, but was kind of like a quiet presence in the room. And when he had something to say, always had very useful resources to put out. Of the participants, besides myself, I had mentioned before, Christiana, who works at the University of Bergamo, Franz, who works with the Dance Institute, Sote, who is part of the global European Ambassadors for Data Management. He studies in Nice. Anna, who works in Slovenia, who works in a smaller institute. And we had Lana, who joined us, who was part of the ICTP. So six of us, quite. So in the whole room, you're looking at about 10 people. So they had asked us to give kind of positive and negatives. And we had mentioned that the interactive nature of the program, the smallness of the group, is something that everybody did like. That the exercises were like, kept us so not only awake, but was a good balance of like doing things and not. The fact that they were very open and kind of very receptive, and it never felt like we were just being taught, but we're kind of like sharing in the experience. And then people made suggestions about kind of just improving a bit of the flow, because even though everything made sense why we did it, at times it felt like we were sometimes jumping around and not following a particular path. I said that I had wished that there was more of a, it was quite a like top-heavy look at things and not a quite like, look, I'm at ground level with some of the data and I'm being a bit of a data steward who has to work with others, that there wasn't enough work on, okay, using R or metadata schemas perhaps to like build on this. It made me walk away thinking here that we are, UCT, we're really on the right track. If they were to look at us, there's quite a lot of useful study things that we are doing. So overall, it just made feel much more empowered about the situation.